listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster for episode 256 of the show. Keaton, welcome back for another episode. How you doing, man?
Great. Doing great.
Yeah, do you have a nice bevy in front of you right now as we're about to record?
Just water.
Same.
Water in a Wahoo's Fish Tacos cup.
Nice. Yeah, you got to stay hydrated, so that's important. I'm drinking out of a Red Sox tumbler right now, so, you know, appropriate for the podcast. But we're not here to talk hydration. We're here to talk Red Sox. And the Red Sox right now, as we are currently recording, are playing against the Minnesota Twins at Target Field. It was not very full last time I was looking at the stands there. But it looks like a nice field anyhow. Have you ever gotten out there? I know you're a Midwestern guy. Have you ever been to a game at Target?
I haven't. I think we actually had plans to go because my girlfriend is from a suburb of Minneapolis, so we go back there quite often.
You should definitely go.
But something happened and we weren't able to make it. I don't remember what it was. But we did have plans to go to a game one time. It just didn't work.
Okay. Well, I'm interested to hear the scouting report. I've always wanted to go there since it opened up. It looks like a nice little park. But anyhow, Red Sox have 34 games left, including the one that is currently being played as we record this. So as you listen to it, they'll have 33 games left. And they are pretty much eliminated from the playoffs. We were talking about the playoff contention last week for the Red Sox, and their numbers were, you know, pretty low back then, under 10%. But now Fangraphs has them at 2.8% to make the playoffs, and Baseball Reference has them at 0.6% to make the postseason. So effectively, the Red Sox have been eliminated. And as a result of this, and, you know, I don't know, maybe just... Finally, the higher-ups over at Baseball Ops, and Bloom and crew, wanting to make some moves, they have finally DFA'd a couple of people from the bullpen. Hirokazu Sawamura and Austin Davis are no longer on this roster. They finally did promote Zach Kelly, which is a great thing. They also promoted Caleb Ort. First of all, Keaton, what do you think about the promotion of Zach Kelly? This is something we've been clamoring for a long time.
Yeah, it feels overdue. I think you and I have been, you know, for the past few pods, have been talking about him and Bizzardo and Frank German as some guys we like to see at the major league level to see what they can do and see what basically kind of petition for their role on the 2023 team and what they could potentially do. So it's nice to see one of those guys finally get up here because for pretty much the whole season, what the middle relief at the major league level was doing was pretty crappy. So we kept looking for there had to be options somewhere, anywhere out there in the universe. So it's good to see some of that finally happening, even though we've really kind of felt like, I don't know, 2 weeks ago was probably a more fitting timetable for this to start happening. But, you know, better late than never.
Yeah, it does feel too little too late. Feels like they should have done this, I don't know, probably maybe 2 months ago. Something like that. I'm being a little bit aggressive by saying 2 months ago, but at least a month ago, it felt like this move should have been made. Really interesting note about Zach Kelly, and you know, this comes from the Twitter account of Jake Ignazewski, who runs the Locked On Red Sox podcast over there. He said, you know, a little bit about the journey that Zach Kelly has taken to get here. So 2017, he signed for $500 as an undrafted free agent by the A's. He was released by the A's in 2018, had surgery on his UCL, Tommy John, in 2020, 2021, signed by the Red Sox, and 2022, you know, making it all the way to the show. So he's had a hell of a long road. Pretty cool to see a guy like that stick with it so long and, you know, get rewarded by the game.
He signed for $500?
$500.
Wow.
Only the A's would sign someone for $500.
That's nuts.
Yep. Quite a journey.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, really is. Got to root for guys like that. Absolutely. Very cool story. You know, on the other side of things, though, Caleb Ort, not new to us. He's been up here before. Caleb Ort probably only promoted because he was already on the 40-man roster. I'm a little bit unsure as to why the Red Sox have been so protective of these 40-man spots and why they've been so unwilling to churn these guys a little bit more. Caleb Ort, I certainly wasn't impressed by when he came up here last time, and I'm bringing up his numbers right now. 9 ERA here with the Red Sox over 15 innings pitched. Was not good. I mean, definitely got hit hard. So, I mean, what do you expect them to see with Caleb Ort? Do you think that this is a legitimate chance for him, or do you think that this is just some sort of temporary roster management going on here?
Well, so initially I was annoyed when it happens, but then with more time to digest, I mean, I still don't really get it, but I guess I get it. So Ort's numbers in AAA are way better. I mean, you pointed out the ERA, 7 walks and 15 innings, also not great. Numbers in AAA, they were way better. 288 ERA, 1.1 whip versus the 2 whip in those 15 innings at the major league level. 53 strikeouts in 40.2 innings in AAA as well, to only 18 walks in that time frame too. So his numbers in AAA have been way better. So it feels like, you know, maybe they're hoping for a little bit of a bounce back or more of that kind of performance bringing him back. And as you pointed out, he was already on the 40-man roster. So they have an open slot on the 40-man roster for what I'm hoping would be Tristan Casas. So he could slide right on in there, and then you could still DFA two guys that we're going to talk about in a minute and still make room for Frank German and Eduard Pizzardo. So we could still get all of the guys that we want to see and get rid of all the guys we don't. It's just a really weird kind of like jumbly way to do it rather than just straight up doing it. So yeah. It just, yeah, I if you squint, you can see how it happens kind of deal. It's just kind of like a weird way of doing it. It's kind of like doing it in like 3 to 4 steps rather than just doing it all at once. I don't really get the doing it this way. Cause I don't get like how it helps. Like it's not, I don't get the sense in like doing it in stages or like why, what's the sense in like, I mean, the reason why you would do it in stages is because you're waiting for rosters to expand before you add Casas to the 40-man roster to call him up. But then it's okay. Why is Brazier still here and Familia?
Yeah. Like,
just pop them out of here. Who cares? Why would you open up the 40-man roster spot now? Why, like, and then just kind of keep it open for a couple of days. Like, why wouldn't you just DFA the guys you need to DFA now call those other bullpen guys up and then open up the spot when you needed to open up the spot. That just makes more sense to me. I don't really get it. So, I don't know. It's just kind of some weird shenanigans, but I think it's still going to work out the way we hope, although they seem so attached to Brazier, I'm convinced he's never going to go away.
Yeah, it's kind of odd that they are, you know, out eliminated from postseason contention for all intents and purposes, and that they are still hanging on to Brazier and Familia. It feels like they're only hanging on to those two guys because they still pitch with Velo. I mean, Familia might not know where it's going, but he throws hard, and Brazier, you know, same thing. He misses his spots, but he's been cranking it up to 98, and occasionally he throws a nasty slider, which, you know, he shows flashes of looking like a back-end guy. But, you know, the other thing that I was thinking that might have impacted this is, you know, they made these moves yesterday on the 28th. On the 27th, Eduard Bizardo pitched three innings down at AAA. So, you know, he probably wasn't quite ready to come up because he's been used in these, like, three to, you know, a few multi-inning stints like that. So perhaps he wasn't ready. And Frank German has been used in some save situations for AAA Worcester too. So, you know, I agree. I think it would have made sense to do all of these things at the same time. I don't see the value of Brazier and Familia on a team that is not contending right now. I think you got to give these guys the auditions. And then, you know, to get to this later on, I guess, you know, we'll get to it now because we're already kind of jumping ahead. But rosters are going to expand on the 28th, or to 28, I should say, on September 1st. And, you know, it's logical at that point when you add two roster spots that Casas and Wong would get those two spots if you were going to, you know, audition all the bullpen names now. So it's just an odd order to do this. And we did get a listener question about this from Patty O'D. He says, why have the Red Sox been so reluctant to bring up AAA guys over the last month? Isn't it good to have an extended look at guys this time of year so you know what you have for 2023? I'm thinking about Wong on also relievers Kelly and German. Absolutely. I mean, I agree with Patty O'D. I think having the ability to see these guys at the major league level for a longer period of time is probably a good thing. But I also do recognize the fact that, like, you know, the Red Sox have a lot of eyes on AAA Worcester. So they're still constantly getting reports from the coaches down there who are working with these guys. And, you know, they're people who are seeing these guys perform every day. So, you know, I think there's definitely some element of that to it. But, you know, I don't know. Do you have any other theories as to why they haven't been doing these things sooner?
No, none at all whatsoever.
Yep, quite odd. Okay, so with all the bullpen shakeup stuff, Keaton, I wanted to take a look at the bullpen names that we've been talking about and play a little game of whether or not you think they're going to be on the team in 2023. Okay?
Okay.
All right, let's start with the easy ones. Whitlock.
Yes.
Will he be in the pen or the rotation?
Rotation.
Okay, I agree. John Schreiber.
Yes.
Matt Barnes.
Yes.
I kind of think so, too. Matt Strom. Will they re-sign him?
Yes. Man, that's a tough one.
I'm an easy no on this one. I don't think he re-signs. He wants to be a starter. Remember that weird thing?
Right. He does. So. Yeah, you're right. No, they don't. I forgot about that. You're right.
Juris Familia.
No.
I'm a no. Brazier.
No.
Any chance Hirokazu Sawamura sneaks through waivers and gets back?
No.
Absolutely not. I have no idea. So out of all of these guys that they chose to DFA, the fact that they chose Hirokazu Sawamura over Brazier and Familia is kind of befuddling to me. And I know that people are going to say, dude, he can't pitch at home. His home splits have been awful. Yes, his home splits have been awful. But the dude throws a 93 to 96 mile an hour splitter. You know, and he's been electric on the road. I was a little surprised that Sawamura was the first one to go, only because stuff-wise, he's definitely been my favorite out of that back-end group of, like, crappy relievers. But it's just been so clear all year long that Alex Cora has not trusted him to the same degree that he has Brazier and some of these other guys.
Yep.
So... Austin Davis, any chance at a reunion there?
No.
I'm going to say no as well. And then let's go with the new guys here. Is Bizarro on the team next year?
Yes.
I'm going to say no. Frank German.
Yes.
I'm going to say yes. Zach Kelly?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes as well. Caleb Ort?
No.
I'm going to say no. Darwinson Hernandez?
Yeah.
Well, I think so too. He's a lefty with electric stuff.
By team, do you mean like on...
Like in the org still.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what did I say for Bizarro?
You said yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Then yeah.
And Tyler Danish. It'll be the last one we end on here. Because he's on the 40, man. And he's active now.
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah, I think Danish will be back as well. But this is all to say that the Major League bullpen is going to look extremely different next year. You know, out of the guys we just mentioned, we're really talking about John Schreiber, Matt Barnes, and maybe Frank German as, like, locks for this bullpen going into next year. We didn't mention Tanner Houck, who's clearly going to be involved in some way. I still think he's probably going to be a reliever. But, you know, this unit requires a major overhaul that's going to have to be a priority of Bloom and the Red Sox in the offseason. And it's clear to me that they can't do this all internally. This has to be done. They have to spend some money on it. It's something we've been harping on for a while. It was a glaring weakness at the beginning of the year, and it's really proven to be the Achilles heel of this team throughout the entire season. And I think, you know, aside from injuries and underperformance on offense by some other guys, it's right up there with the top reasons why this team has drastically underperformed this year.
Why do you think Bizarro will not be with the team anymore?
I don't know. I'm getting this feeling like there's something about Bizarro that they just don't like that much because of the way that they're using him in this sort of multi-inning role and the fact that he hasn't come up already. It just feels to me like they like a lot of other guys better. And I'm not quite sure why. He's also one of these guys that's a minor league free agent, so he might try and get a better opportunity elsewhere. It just feels to me like there's something there that could lead to him seeking a different opportunity, maybe a more sure path, to being a part of a major league bullpen next year.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Some other news here. Trevor Story has returned. Now Christian Arroyo and his scalding hot bat are playing first base. So Christian Arroyo, so far so good. You know, we're only through a third of the game or so. But he made a nice little scoop and stretch over there at first base without, you know, breaking his groin in half again. So, so far, so good. I mean, this is it's kind of interesting because, you know, Trevor Story, obviously a great second baseman, defensively struggled this year offensively to some degree, certainly hasn't hit quite as well as we thought he would. But Christian Arroyo, on the other hand, in the second half of the season so far, has been really one of the better players on the entire Red Sox team and really one of the better hitters in baseball for a while now. I mean, just over the last 2 weeks, we were going to get to some of the names that are hot, but he's got a 129 WRC plus, you know, driving in runs. He's just playing great baseball. What do you see as the role for him going forward on this team, especially as he's one of the few guys that's really locked in here, you know, for the future?
Yeah, he seems like that utility guy. I mean, his role is, I don't think, in the middle of the infield, so it's going to have to be somewhere else. But he seems like just a utility guy that'll get a bunch of at-bats at a bunch of different places. Because the team determined to get him, you know, get him at-bats in places to play. They're just going to, you know, play him in positions he may not be, you know, super familiar with. But, you know, he's been, you know, up to the task so far tonight in a better way than he was before. So, unless, God forbid, the worst happens, and, you know, if they do need him to play a middle infield position, then it seems like they're comfortable with that potential solution.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it would work if Xander left in the offseason, and, you know, we don't have to really get into that, but hypothetically, if Xander was to leave, and if the Red Sox didn't re-sign him or go after Trey Turner or Carlos Correa or Dansby Swanson or any of the other names that are out there, and theoretically Trevor Story could move over to shortstop if his arm is good enough to do that, would you be comfortable with Christian Arroyo being the everyday second baseman with what you've seen from him in the second half this year?
No. I mean, it's been nice, but yeah. No.
Why are you a no on him, given what we've seen offensively?
I don't think that this is who he can be over an entire season. It's been a nice little second half for him. But I also want more power out of that position. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the speed's not really, that's not really that big of a deal there, but more power out of the position. The defense is fine, but also more consistency. Like, this is really kind of like a scalding second half, mm-hmm, that he's been on. And his career numbers have never really been anything like this. This is also the most games he's ever played in the season. So I don't think this is something that's sustainable over an entire 162, or if you gave him, you know, 140 games, I don't think this is the Arroyo that you would see.
Yeah, I agree. And you nailed the thing that I was thinking of, is just the durability. I mean, that's the reason why the Red Sox weren't super comfortable going into the season with him as the starting second baseman. It's not really, you know, purely an ability thing. It's just he hasn't been able to stay on the field to the extent that he has this year. So, yeah, I agree. I think he's a championship level utility player, though. You know, as a bench player, I think that's about as good as you can ask for, but I think stretching him into anything else at this point is probably not smart. for the future. So we are in agreement there, Keaton. But I wanted to look at some of the players on the roster, both on the hitting and pitching side, who have been hot over the last couple of weeks here. And, you know, we'll start with the hottest player over the last week since he's been called up for the Red Sox. Franchy Cordero has 4 home runs over the last week here, 6 games played, 15 plate appearances. So he's batting .385 with 4 home runs. His slugging percentage is over 1,000 since he's been up. That's been very nice. However, he's striking out at 40% of the time. So it's clear that Franchi's approach hasn't changed all that much, even though he's having success with it. I heard you talking to Bailey about this on the Precap podcast, and you guys were envisioning what his role may or may not be for the 2023 season. Have you seen enough progress from Franchy this year to say that he could be one of the 4 bench players for this team next year? Because I don't think that it's a good situation for him to be a starter for this team, whether that be in the outfield or certainly not at first base, God forbid at first base. But, I mean, what do you think? Do you think he can really handle that role? I mean, tonight he's playing center field. You know, that's kind of fun because he's played 15 games in center field down at Worcester. He can play all 3 outfield spots. But I just wonder, like, is he a better option there than a guy like Rob Refsnyder?
So, yeah, that is interesting because what made me think things could be different for Franchy when he was doing well in the first half of the season was the strikeout rate. He had cut it pretty decent chunk, even though he wasn't hitting homers. And I thought that that had kind of signified that he had changed his approach. It seems like he decided that was boring and started selling out for power again. And that has led to the massive uptick in strikeouts and correlating in the increase in homers, which makes sense. That all adds up. However, that's not great for, you know, being able to consistently perform in the major leagues. So I was kind of hoping he could just keep the strikeouts down but also hit for power. Maybe that's just not his thing. So, I mean, I don't really know where he fits. So, I mean, 4th outfield is at best where he fits. But I would also rather, I would say as the team is constructed right now, that would be his role going into 2023, which is ultimately what Bailey and I landed on in the Precap there. I would rather see somebody else in that role who's not in the organization. But I feel like that's probably not going to be the case. Probably won't. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a priority for the, they have enough priorities, for starters and everyday players that they need to fill that it doesn't seem like, an active role they would go out and search for when they have Franchy as somebody that they can toss in there. So it feels like that's probably ultimately what will happen there. But we'll probably just end up seeing a bunch of hot streaks like this where he'll go on a run of striking out a bunch and hitting some homers, or if he can relax enough, you know, just put the ball in play enough and get on a base and just do enough to turn the lineup over sometimes.
Yeah, for me, I think it comes down to whether or not you prefer Franchy or Rob Refsnyder next year, especially if what, you know, you alluded to happens, if they focus more on the starting players and, you know, they do have some options for 4th outfielder here under team control. It's going to be Rob Refsnyder's first arbier or second arbier next year, but he's not going to command like a huge amount of money. So he's definitely going to be a cheap option as well. I've kind of loved Rob Refsnyder in that role as 4th outfielder, and pinch hitter, which he's delivered some really clutch professional at-bats in pinch hit situations. 147 WRC plus on the season, over 127 plate appearances. He's kind of the ideal bench guy for me. Like, if you have a bench next year that's Ref Snyder, Arroyo, Reese McGuire, or Connor Wong, and, you know, one other guy who, you know, maybe we're not thinking of or maybe isn't on the team right now, I think you're in really good shape from that perspective. I don't think Bobby Dalbec is necessarily the ideal guy for that role, but I think you're in really good shape at that point.
I think I prefer Franchi.
So is it just like the power that you prefer from Franchi, or is it do you think that he's ultimately like the better outfielder as well?
Yeah, both. I also like this is the best season that Ref Snyder has ever had by like a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, again, this is something that you could consistently expect, even especially I feel like in a fourth outfield role,
mm-hmm.
Where he's not getting consistent at bats. I don't think you could count on him to kind of come out, or come in cold. I think he probably would give you the better at bat. I don't think that's a question at all. Ref Snyder probably would give you the better at bat.
Right.
If you're looking for just one pinch hit at bat late in the game, he would probably be your guy. But if you're looking for a fourth outfielder to like get starts and like full at bats in a game every now and then, maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, I think I'd rather go Franchi.
Okay. All right, let's look at conversely on the other side of things. We talked about a couple guys who have been hot over the last 2 weeks in Franchi, Rob Ref Snyder, Christian Arroyo as well. But conversely, on the side of guys who have been very, very cold over the last 2 weeks, would you have a guess, without looking, who has been the coldest hitter on the Red Sox over the last 2 weeks? Who is the clubhouse leader in worst WRC plus over the last 2 weeks?
Rafael Devers.
It is Rafael Devers.
Yeah.
Yes. He has been a nightmare at the plate. 27 WRC plus over the last 2 weeks. You know, he's not striking out a ton, still 18% K rate, but his swing just has not been quite right. He's actually had a pretty brutal August as well, over the whole month, but you know, a little bit surprising there. What do you think's going on with Rafi?
No idea. I mean, watching him, it doesn't look like he's having bad at bats. He's just kind of having bad results, and I don't really get it.
I think
it seems like maybe it's piling up.
I think it's health, man. I think it's been since that little hammy tweak that he had. You know, it seems like he just doesn't have his legs under him fully or something. I don't know. Seems like something might be mechanically off. You know how we read that Xander article last week and he was talking about how when he got injured, like things started to slightly tweak in his swing? I kind of feel like that might be going on with Devers right now.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly would explain it.
Yeah. The other guy who's super, super duper cold right now was just sent down to the minor leagues. Jaron Duran, 51 WRC plus. I think we have to talk about the Jaron Duran situation here. Keaton, he has been, you know, your guy for a long time. And Jaron Duran oozes potential. He's probably one of the fastest guys in the major leagues, but clearly a lot to work on the offensive side and the defensive side, especially with his reads and, you know, some of his effort and stuff. This feels like a crossroads for him right now in his career. What do you ultimately think happens with Jaron Duran as we look towards next season in 2023?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he needs to find a way to get consistent at bats at the major leagues, but at the same time, like, he needs to be able to provide serviceable defense to justify getting the at bats. So, he needs to figure that out. I think that's going to be the biggest thing, is being able to get the defense right. And I it feels like maybe that's not going to happen with the Red Sox, because I don't think there's a place for him to get consistent at bats with the Red Sox, but also just the magnifying glass that's on him and his defense. I don't think Fenway Park is the place for him to figure it out. And that is the most difficult outfield in the majors to figure out. So it's a guy who's trying to basically cement his fundamentals in the outfield. Fenway Park is not the place to do it. And then being under the microscope of all of Red Sox Nation on every read you're making, doesn't help a young player. So I think he would be a fantastic trade trip to go somewhere else where people aren't paying as much attention. And then he'll have plenty of time to figure it out and all the at-bats he needs to reach his potential.
Yeah, I think he and Cutter Crawford feel like an Oakland Athletic to me.
There you go.
We'll see what happens in the offseason. Maybe they can be part of a package to get us a real catcher. Let's move over to the pitching side here. Not a ton of surprising things going on the pitching side of things over the last 2 weeks, but I think the biggest development to me is Matt Barnes starting to look a little bit more like himself, like good Matt Barnes. Over the last couple weeks, he's got a 21.4% hard hit rate, which is very, very low. And, you know, over the course of that time period, he's also got a 1.50 ERA over six innings pitched. He's got a save sprinkled in there. He's been pretty good. And if you dial into the numbers a little bit more, you know, the FIP is 1.46. XFIP 2.68. So any way you cut it, he's pitched pretty good. And I think one of the better things that we've noticed about Matt Barnes too is the velocity on the fastball has been back. He's been averaging 95 miles an hour on that over the last 2 weeks. So, you know, how convinced are you that Matt Barnes can be a usable piece moving forward? We both think he's going to be part of this pen next year.
Yeah. I think he would be great as a bridge guy again. I don't know if I'm back to trusting him in a higher leverage role, but I mean, we've seen him be really good. It's just a matter of him getting healthy and kind of getting back to that, but this is really great progress. And if he's able to finish the season and be this consistent over a more extended period of time, then I think I'm going to start to buy back into that. And really start to, buy more into the belief that it was all just all of that overusage and, something that we consistently see with Cora and his bullpen arms, and, hope that basically taking the last year to get right, and coming into, 2023 healthy and hopefully with, a completely rebuilt bullpen. They can avoid that, and having some set defined roles will also help that and keep that. We won't really know until we kind of get there, but it'll at least potentially help that from not happening again. But I would feel a lot better if he's able to just continue this through to the end of the season, and about him being here again for next year, and he would probably work his way back into the bullpen circle of trust with me.
Well, if Matt Barnes returns to relevance, I have a feeling that Matt Collins is going to pop up again and start talking to us about how great Matt Barnes is. So I don't want it to happen.
I mean, it'd be deserved. It would be deserved.
It would be deserved. I know that Matt's not listening to this podcast, but I wish if he was, he would hear the Matt Barnes burn. But unfortunately, he's checked out. But the off chance. Hello, Matt. All right. So let's move on from all this stuff to get to our listener questions. Patio D had a second one, which I thought was a really interesting question. He says, is there anyone else on Worcester that you could see having a major role in 2023 other than maybe Casas? And so I was perusing the roster over there, and there were a couple of names that stood out to me, but I wanted to give you the first chance to name a guy who you think could have a key role on this team next year. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I found a few. I guess it depends on what you mean by major or key. What was the wording in the question?
I think he said, like, what was it? Let me take a look. Major role. So
yeah.
when I think major role, I think, like, a member of the 26-man roster who is part of that group for, you know, a good chunk of the season.
Yeah, okay. I feel like, I mean, Downs and Duran were two.
Mm-hmm.
Siebold and Winkowski were also two. And then the bullpen names that we talked about as well. So I think there's a pretty decent amount of guys that, I mean, fit your criteria of, like, spending a majority of the season on the 26-man roster. And then also Connor Wong as well. But I feel like the two that'll have the most significant would be Wong and Casas.
Yeah, I think Wong is definitely the guy who stuck out to me the most aside from Casas. But then again, you know, I'm actually writing about this right now. I'm just about done with my first off-season article that's going to be coming out. I'm going to be having a series where I preview kind of every position and look at what the team has internally, what options there are externally. I'm not sure what the Red Sox are going to do at catcher. And we talked about this briefly last time. If they really wanted to go cheap, they could potentially, you know, let Pawecki go and go with a tandem of Connor Wong in Reese McGuire there. But it feels to me like that would be really risky because you're essentially leaving yourself with no catcher depth after that, and catchers do get hurt. So I think that they are going to like Connor Wong to be, you know, the guy who's starting the year as the catcher at AAA, unless, of course, they move Reese McGuire or something like that in a trade. But it feels like he's going to be sort of the emergency guy, not necessarily the backup right away. It feels to me very much like the guy who's going to be the starting catcher is not yet on this team, and that Reese McGuire is going to be the backup. Is that kind of the way that you're leaning as well? Or, you know, do you feel like this tandem of Wong and McGuire would be serviceable for next year?
I think it could be serviceable depending on what the rest of the lineup looks like. But I think there would need to be a lot of other stuff filled in for that to be the case. But yeah, right now I'm with you leaning that I believe the starting catcher is not currently in the organization.
Yeah. And on the pitching side of things, I would definitely say, I think German is going to be part of the 26 man for a good chunk of next year. I would say Brian Mata definitely has a really good shot of being part of the team for a significant portion of time. And one other guy we didn't really talk about when we mentioned pitchers is lefty Chris Murphy. You know, he's currently pitching out of the rotation there, but Chris Murphy's a guy who I could see getting some time in the major league bullpen next year as a lefty, especially because, you know, when we looked at the bullpen right around the All-Star break, it looked like we were going to have, you know, four lefties in the bullpen potentially. I remember talking about the surplus of lefties that could be had over there. And that just really hasn't come to fruition because of injuries and underperformance and all sorts of other things. So I could see Chris Murphy kind of emerging in that role as a lefty out of the bullpen next year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's got really good stuff.
So. Well, we've heard that before.
Yes. Next question comes from TJ McPhee, and he says, should Bayo start next season in this rotation? Is number three starter too aggressive, or is Whitlock the number three?
I don't think three is too aggressive. I'd be fine with him starting in the rotation.
Yeah, I would too. You know, looking at it right now, just for guys who are under contract next year, it would be Sale would be year one. Year two would probably be, I mean, year Whitlock. Two might be Whitlock, right?
Yeah.
And then Bale, year three, and Pivetta, year four. Or no, I guess it would be Crawford would be year four, right? And Pivetta would be year five.
Yeah.
If the season started today, that would probably be it. But, you know, we're seeing it from Bayo. He shoved last time he was out. He's pitching awesome right now as we're recording this podcast. The guy has just crazy movement on that two-seam. And the changeup is such a weapon. So I think three is... I think it's aggressive for him next year if he's the three. Like, I think you'd prefer him to be a really good four or five next year. But, like, I think long-term he could settle in as a very high-end three or even a two starter.
Yep. I'd agree.
Very excited about Bayo. I don't know if you saw this, Keaton, but he broke Gio Urshela's bat. With a sinker, and it just like it shattered. All he was doing was holding this little nubbin of a handle, and he looked very shocked that it had happened. So, you know, Bayo has bat busting stuff. It's pretty good. Our next two questions to end the night come from House of Kuzu, and he says, are you ready to see Xander as the Dodger shortstop next season? Turner will be a lot more expensive than Xander, and Xander will be cheaper, and he's still a great player and can move to third base when Turner is done playing it.
Watching Mookie and Xander together winning like 110 games, I don't think my heart can take it. Like, not for the Red Sox. I don't think my heart can take it. Wasn't much.
Feels like cruel and unusual punishment to do that to us. So I'm not ready for that. I don't think, actually, the analytical Dodgers would really be super into paying Xander to be a shortstop. Doesn't feel like it's something they would do. Not necessarily that they wouldn't pay Xander to be on that team, but it doesn't seem like the cleanest fit out of all the places he could go.
The Cubs are apparently all in on him.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That does seem like a pretty clean fit.
Right?
Yeah. I guess the only plus side to that, Keaton, is you'll be nice and close so you can you can go check in on our boy.
Short little walk away.
But yeah, man. Watching Mookie just absolutely tear it up with the Dodgers is enough for me. So yeah, not really ready to watch Xander do the same. And his next question says, has Bloom done enough to get fired? Clearly lost the Mookie trade, insulting core players with extension offers, meh offseason acquisitions, and back-to-back horrible trade deadlines.
So, here's the thing. We as fans can be really annoyed with that, and I think we are. Because there's a lot of people who are pretty annoyed with all that stuff. However, ownership is not annoyed by any of that at all. The Mookie trade was like a prerequisite for taking the job. Whoever it was who was coming in, like Dombrowski was fired because he was trying to extend Mookie and they didn't want him to. And then, so whoever was coming in was going to have to trade Mookie, and whoever was coming in was automatically losing that trade. There's just no way that trade was going to be a win for the Red Sox. Ownership was completely fine with that because they wanted it to happen. Insulting core players with extension offers that are like low balls to start here. Again, ownership doesn't really want to spend money, so they're totally fine with those. It's really frustrating for us as fans watching our favorite players who have been here forever, key parts of this team for 5-10 years, get insulted. Ownership doesn't care. The meh offseason acquisitions, again, that kind of goes back to not wanting to spend money and also sort of tied in with the horrible trade deadlines. Ownership does not care. They're very happy with his performance. So, no, he's not going to get fired.
Yeah, I mean, so before we got onto the show, it broke that Sam Kennedy came out and basically said that both Cora and Bloom are safe for this upcoming offseason. I don't think that Bloom has done enough to get fired. And, you know, I've not shied away from being critical of Bloom when I thought that he's done a bad job. And I agree with the extension offers being bad. I don't think he did terrible in the Mookie trade because I think that Verdugo is a very good player. The offseason, I've been highly critical of. I agree there. It was a very bad offseason. But I actually don't think that this particular trade deadline was that bad. I think three of the deals were pretty good. I think they were just moves that ought to have been made in the offseason, which makes them feel worse than they are. I think this is the make or break season for Chaim Bloom. If things do not go well in 2023, he's very much on the hot seat. And I think that he will be the person to go before Cora if 2023 goes very badly. And it wouldn't shock me if both went, but I think that it's going to be Bloom to go if it doesn't go well in 2023.
Yeah. There's also some built-in excuses too, like you've outlined on previous pods, like COVID happened, which kind of wrecked the 2020 season, like losing Eduardo Rodriguez for the entire season. Then there was also, I think, the injuries to Chris Sale, which helped derail that season as well. And kind of this season as well. and then the lockout this offseason, which don't know to the extent that it messed with their offseason plans, but they certainly affected them in some form or fashion. So all of that stuff is gone now, and all of this financial flexibility that they've been playing for years, like there should be so much pressure on this offseason to deliver a team that should be like top three in the American League, that if that doesn't happen, then this is just one of the biggest failures in Red Sox franchise history.
Big words there. Biggest failures in Red Sox franchise history. Yeah. It would certainly be squandering years of a pretty good core here.
And all of the others, like the not spending money, having the really poor off seasons, and not doing much at the trade deadlines, it's also kind of like built to this offseason in that they've retained all of this capital to have just all of whatever gobs of millions of dollars to spend this offseason. So if they don't spend it this offseason and actually make some things happen, then it's like, okay, what was the last 3 years for then?
Yeah.
So it's been frustrating as a fan, but he hasn't done enough to get fired. And it, as frustrating as it has been, I don't think he's actually had a true offseason to basically show what he can do as a general manager. As much as I disagree with the like with the not spending and like you're the Boston Red Sox, it doesn't matter kind of thing. Like all of that excuse is gone now. All of that is gone.
Yeah,
there are no excuses anymore. Yeah, there are. There's not a single excuse. Like all of the people who claim that the financials are the reason that whatever bullshit has happened, that's gone. Financials are not a problem. So if they don't put the team on the field that they claim they want to put, that they've been claiming for the past 3 years that they've wanted to put on the field, if that isn't the team that is on the field, that is a massive failure.
Amen. All right. Well, that feels like a good place to end the pod tonight. Keaton, thank you for joining me. Listeners, thank you for listening to this episode. If you would like to rate and review us, we would appreciate that. Go on to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We haven't gotten any reviews in a little while, and we had, you know, a couple that were a little bit mixed in the previous years. So if you could, you know, give us a good review, that would definitely help us out. You know, follow us on Twitter. You can follow Keaton at The Spoken Keats. You can follow me at Dev Jake, and you can follow the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. And we'll be back in your ears next week.